Welcome to Industry Insights, the EFM podcast presented by the European Film Market of the Berlinale. This podcast series shines a light on highly topical, trendsetting industry issues. It's designed as a compass for the film year ahead, helping professionals navigate the fast-changing creative landscape. Industry Insights is a year-round podcast co-funded by Creative Europe Media. My name is Nunnu Karppinen. I am COO and Head of International at Postcontrol Helsinki. And in today's episode, I discuss with Mafalda Duarte, Maria Tanjala and Dr. Pirita Pyykkönen-Klauk, who share insights on sustainability, innovation and navigating the opportunities and challenges of tech-driven creative industries. The conversation was recorded during this year's EFM. Let's start. Hello, everybody. Good morning. My name is Nunnu Karppinen. I come from Finland, where I am COO and Head of International of a company called Postcontrol Helsinki. It's a post-production company, but I am thrilled to be here sharing the stage with these wonderful women. It's a very topical theme that we will be discussing today. The panel is organized in collaboration with the Erich Pommer Institute, and I was asked before we get going to unravel the secrets of these fantastic leaders to tell you a little bit about Erich Pommer Institute. As probably known to many of you, Erich Pommer Institute is a professional training institute based here in Potsdam, Babelsberg, not far from here. It works with professionals from Germany and across Europe with the mission to support education, lifelong learning, and professional development within the media and film industries. Its educational focus spans key areas such as business and management, legal aspects of the media sector, media tech, and innovation. And I was given a heads up that there will be an AI-related program or a series of workshops that will be launched in the next months or so. So keep an eye on Erich Pommer Institute's website and probably sign up for your newsletter. Designing resilience, not just reacting to crisis, is something that we want to talk about today. Tech is sometimes framed as something that happens to creative industries, and I think we want to flip that perspective and look at how our panelists are actively shaping the tech-driven businesses and business models that protect creative work, strengthen ownership, and enable long-term sustainability. We will be talking about tech, but I want to recognize already at this stage that resilience is something that kind of comes from the people that are running those companies. So it's tech is a tool and it's a system, it's a structure, but you know, essentially companies themselves are constructs of human beings and their resilience is of key as well, I think. But anyways, let's start finally with the introductions. Please give a warm welcome to Maria Tanjala. We'll do this one by one. So Maria, the stage is yours. Would you like to introduce yourself a little bit? You are the one who brought us a couple of visual aids as well.
Of course. So good morning and thank you everyone for joining this conversation. I'm Maria Tanjala. I'm the co-founder of FilmChain. We launched 8 years ago, right? It wasn't exactly this stage, but as a EFM startup. So it has been a beautiful journey of 8 years within the EFM family. And we looked at how we need a platform in the film and TV industry, but then expanding it to games and other industries to manage revenue in a way that is very inclusive and gives access to money and to financial data as close as to real time. So it's me and my co-founder, Irina, who's also here today. She comes from more of an economic and technical background. I come from a film background. Of course, we have an entire team. And we always try to combine having experts in the creative industries, in film, TV, who have decades of experience, but also to bring in-house tech members, which is also very important. And having the team like really following the vision is absolutely crucial in building resilient businesses. And now we got to a very good stage where we operate globally and we are across America, Asia, Australia. We have some fantastic partners who took this leap into the future and started trusting systems that are more automatic, jumped from manual to technology driven. And we're very grateful because some of them have done it right from the early beginnings. Mm. And our big vision is how to essentially bring transparency and build trust in the entire money flow. So our big vision is from viewer to creator. So how we can empower everyone in the entire value chain through different technological solutions. So some can be for studios and enterprises. You know, it can be a management system that is super complex and deals with all of the complexities of financial. But also, of course, as a CAM, a collection agent, collection account management, to bring trust and build that ecosystem for all of the sales agents, financiers, producer, and whatnot. So we looked at how we can give real-time access to your money, whether it's 5 euros or 500,000 euros, and to do this in a very reliable, verifiable, transparent way. And really, we thought, how is it possible that now we can see all our bank statements on our mobile phones and, you know, we click something that we buy today and it arrives tomorrow and things circulate so fast in all of the other industries. But in the film industry, you sometimes have to wait for months, for other times you have to wait for years in order to access your finance. So another kind of tip of how to build resilient businesses is like, if you have a problem in your industries, like how do you look parallel? You look to how other industries have solved this and essentially try to build a very tailored solution to your industry to solve your problem. So what has been a big journey for us is like sometimes habits take a long time to change, and you have to have patience and resilience to believe in your vision, then the fruits of your work will come.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks so much. I'm curious to learn a little bit about the starting point, like kind of what made you believe that it's the rigid financial infra that is the pressure point where tech could genuinely strengthen the industry originally?
It has started with our experience in the film industry and really seeing how it was taking so long to get access to our money, first and foremost, but also to information. So it was taking so long to finally become aware of performance, to see how that production is performing in various territories, to access reports, to make empowered decisions that are more data-driven and not just kind of based on gut feeling. And then we started looking at statistics that were crazy, as in it was in the UK, it was like creative industries are 1.1 billion out of pocket at every single time because of unpaid invoices or delayed access to their own money, businesses going out of business because there was money further down the line to come, but they didn't come at the right time to pay their employees. And from our own studies, you know, up to 30% of the revenue is either recouped very late or never recouped.
Right.
So we said, okay, we need to look how we can bring technology to really push the boundaries of banking systems, banking rails, to bring speed and transparency into people's wallets.
Great. And now you've been up and running for, say, 6, 7 years?
8 years.
8 years, yes. Fantastic. Thank you very much. Moving on, Mafalda Duarte. Over to you. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you so much. My name is Mafalda Duarte and I'm a board member, secretary for the International Game Developer Association. I also work with Women in Games, a nonprofit based in the UK, to promote women in all facets of the game industry, both as players, as developers, and in the entertainment side and streaming. And I've been a producer and studio head for the past 7 years. My experience has been mostly with indie games. I work for two big indie companies in their respective countries, in Portugal with their Monkeys, and then here starting out Telescope Game Studios, the sister studio for Telescope Animation. And being indie is being resilient by design. Pretty sure in our film crowd also is the same on your side. It means a lot of doing a lot with very little and having to compete with bigger titles with more resources in the open market. And so I have like these two facets of my work, both like as a developer and as a creator, and then as an advocate for the industry. And so a lot of the work that we do, for example, in IGDA, is how can we promote best practices? How can we create sometimes some more industry-wide guidelines? Because that is something that the game industry, being a little bit younger, it's still lacking. I can give you an example of a tool that we created a couple of years ago. There was the credits guideline, because a lot of companies use game credits as this carrot to keep people around. And if you leave before a game is out, your name is out. And that creates problems for developers' careers. Or, for example, different types of games credit differently. So if you play a mobile game, you might see that you don't know the name of anyone that worked there. Also, if they are long-term, like you couldn't, because then those names are always evolving and pages long. So like, how do we solve problems like that? So yeah, that's part of what we do to try to create a better, fairer game industry.
Great. Well, from this perspective, kind of representing the film and TV, all TV, audiovisual sort of perspective, games are quite often perceived as more sort of innately more resilient than film, but you have an insider view. Where does that perception kind of fall apart?
Well, I think part of that perception is what you're showing in your slide, Maria, of, you know, all of those layers of where the money goes, like how it is distributed, how can you have access? And there's an element of, in video games, you technically can sell direct to consumer. There is a little bit more of that ease of distribution, that ease of reach, and it is like a tit for tat of like, okay, I'm selling a game and I'm getting this amount back. But, and also the ease of the use of the technology, right? But I think that part, where it falls apart is, I think when people look at games as engines, so the ability of doing a game in Roblox and making money with it, or visual programming, where maybe they can have tools like Game Maker and doing games quicker or easier with easier access. Well, but that's the same thing as having your iPhone and being a cinematographer and or a YouTuber, and now you have also access to a camera and you're also doing content. So actually that ease of technology and ease of access, it is the same in both worlds. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't say that film is easier to make because YouTube as a platform exists. So I think it's fairly similar there. That's where it falls apart, that we perceive that ease of access as ease of having good access to good marketing budgets and tools and having access to the top tier talent that can deliver a certain amount of stuff. And you don't see like how technical it is to make games and how dependent and like how quick it changes, because you can have a great team that developed to, I don't know, like now consoles are a little bit easier, but if you can imagine that when PlayStation 3 had a proprietary way of developing games there, and you had a team that knew how to do that, they don't necessarily know how to develop them to PlayStation 4. Mm-hmm. That's the where it falls through, is like understanding the technology.
Great, thank you. And then finally, a name that I can actually pronounce with security, my compatriot, Pirita Pyykkönen Klauk. Welcome. Would you introduce yourself and ZDF Sparks, please?
Good morning, everybody. So ZDF Sparks is an AI engineering company. We were founded 2 years ago, and we are building AI solutions in the media industry. So we are what I typically call as a grandchild of ZDF, which is a public broadcasting company in Germany. And they decided they need some new blood, new speed in the developments, and they decided to set up Sparks as a completely new company. So what we are doing is we are, of course, consulting, even though that is not our main goal. Actually, it's not only consulting, we are building new solutions. So what we are doing is we are really looking the whole media value chain from understanding the audience, simulating the audience, finding new ways of getting deeper into the wishes of audience, as is not been possible earlier. And we then combine this information to the program planning, what should be played, when should be played, in which channels it should come out, to the production of the new content and recycling of the old content, all the way to the distribution topics. And we are kind of looking into the value chain from different perspectives. So first of all, of course, we are looking into the direction from how do we combine audience and content? How do we make sure that this is a match, to match what we all want, what the broadcasting company wants, what the production companies also want? And from there, we kind of bring the audience throughout the whole value chain in the different developments, all the way to the distribution. And as we see today, processes are changing all the time in all of these areas. So we need to make sure that we are actually putting AI in place in the right places. So very important for us is, of course, we dive deep into the workflows of the current ones. We also evaluate the new ones. We see where the AI needs to be built new, where existing tools can actually be plugged and play in. And very importantly, our focus lies when something needs to be built. So all of those discussions here also in EFM, when we hear, okay, AI can't do it, we take it as a challenge. And we say, yes, AI can do it, but you have to build it new. And this is exactly where we sit in. So we are looking at a combination of content and audience throughout the whole value chain. Very importantly, we are also looking from the perspective of broadcasting company and also the production companies. So we are seeing the way, how can we bring those two closer to each other in collaboration throughout the whole value chain, when it starts from the audience understanding, which I need to be a little bit critical in the German audience, at least production companies could actually understand audience a little bit better than they do today. And we are trying to see the ways how we can actually start all over from there and bring the broadcasting company and the production company closer to each other with the help of AI.
That's fantastic. I mean, to keep the audience at the core, at the very center for whom we are actually making and creating these stories on screen, big or small. What do you think, Birita, what public broadcasters could learn from startups? Iteration and tolerance for failure, maybe, or what's...
It's a lot of different things. So first of all, and the reason also why Sparks was founded was speed. That's for sure. So public broadcasting companies are typically very slow, and we need to understand it. They can't speed up as fast as startups can do. So this is definitely one aspect. Very important when we're talking about the technology and especially AI is we do not come from media background. So we come from very different industries. So we come from medicine, from human resources, building factories, and we have seen these developments happening in other areas in different contexts. And this means, of course, friction. So we are not taking everything directly as a broadcasting company says. We are questioning everything. And this is very important. So again, these days here in Berlinale AFM, we have been discussing a lot of different changes that is happening in media industry. So one aspect is there are new emerging content. For example, the vertical content, micro dramas. The production processes are completely different than traditional production company processes. Mm-hmm. And they should be also. So because you have to build the scalability. So what we are doing is, of course, we are looking into these production processes and seeing, can we actually change the traditional production processes and put AI into the place to actually make these productions faster, cheaper, better? And there are a lot of discussions if it can be actually cheaper. The first production maybe not, but if you don't get the second production cheaper with the help of AI, you haven't done a very good job in the first one. So this is the aspect what we are looking into details. And of course, it's not only content that is changing, it's the workflows, but also the distribution. So for example, fluid IP in the AI created workflows, we need to take into account and think about how do we build up the data streams throughout the whole production value chain to actually not get stuck in the old ways of doing things, and which would actually then mean also stop for the business.
If I may interject, also for me, it was absolutely fascinating to learn about this because even just as a statement, I feel like ZDF Sparks legitimizes that we shouldn't fear change and we shouldn't fear exploring what the future brings. Don't have a resistance to something new, it's coming. And that is an incredible message for the entire industry. Just legitimizes that the future is now or is just around the corner, and we have to look at it with a critical eye, but also with a constructive mindset. So for me, that was what was absolutely fascinating, to see that from a broadcaster and then a studio and now this division.
Well, let's stick with this theme now, the AI and its impact, and other techs as well. Of course, feel free to bring in your experience. So what's happening now with AI? If you want to elaborate, Birita, a little bit more.
Yeah, so with AI, a lot of things are happening. So when we look at the typical production processes, there was a lot of focus in the post-production earlier with the AI. And the one could ask the question, is it because the AI is particularly suitable for the post-production processes, or is it that our traditional production process is actually quite linear? So whatever is going wrong in the planning, you have to compensate in production and post-production. Whatever goes wrong in production, you have to compensate that in the post-production. And in order to fit things into the budget, the post-production is the target where one needs to innovate a lot. And maybe that has been the reason why there are so much happening in the post-production with the help of AI. What we are doing at Sparks, and what is our close to the heart, is actually audience, bringing really this audience focus into the planning already, and making the audience very close to the processes throughout. So we have also simulating audiences. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to understand who are you targeting for and what is your audience? How does it look like? And also very kind of deeply psychologically, how are your people behaving, how they are feeling emotions, what are you trying to gain with your productions? And you have to target those aspects and make sure that you are hitting in the planning and in the production to those. So I come from the industrial perspective. So we have been building industrial products a long time in a very iterative way, in a very agile way, where everything is A/B tested. When I entered to media space, I didn't see this A/B testing happening, even though it should be.
What's A/B testing?
So you are testing two different alternatives, because we can ask audiences, we can ask a lot of, and there are a lot of surveys going out all the time, but we as humans, we can see if something felt good or bad. We are good at saying that, but why we were feeling in that way, we are not very good at explaining that. So we actually need to get beyond that and do some kind of tricky testing where we don't even actually say to people what we are testing. We are just testing them, and then we are seeing the results, and then we know actually what is working.
Yeah, got it. Would you like to elaborate on this, or just continue from the theme of AI? How do you see that impacting at the moment, or do you see the other tech solutions sort of rising as relevant in your contexts, Maria or
so? Kapalda? Definitely, again, AI is something that we cannot deny, right? So we have to look at it as a fact, and then. It is, for us, even as a business, it's always important to test new things, to see how we can bring the solutions that are currently on the market, whether it's legal tech, whether it's coding, whether it's the AI that we apply to all of the huge financial data sets that we get access to. So through machine learning more than AI to look at analytics and predictions. All of those things are extremely exciting, because we are all, as a team, as a core value for us is to keep agile, to keep curious, to test things out. And we have to carve space, even if it's like, okay, contracts, clients, improving the platform, but it's just like, okay, how do we find enough time to see what else is there, to see how we can optimize workflows, to see how we can push the boundaries to our product, but also to embrace what is out there. Mm. All of these segments, as I said, in whether it's business development, tech, coding, legal tech, and features on our roadmap for our products, they all at the moment are involving to a certain extent AI.
Sure. Mafalda.
Yeah, like I think for our industry is a little bit complicated in the sense that AI means a lot of different things, and we have AI. If you ever played any game and there's a non-playable character, that's AI. If you play a party game versus the machine, the new thing is the generative AI element and the large language models, and like how is that impacting? When you are in the creative industry that is making the assets directly, that does impact artists, that does impact copyright, that does impact like how are those models generated? And so I think there's a lot of conversation in the ethics of it, in the environmental impact, and how that impacts then jobs, talents, and the way that we do our business models, because it does impact business. If you own it, do you don't own it? Like, already in an industry that is kind of hard to copyright things around it. So you cannot copyright a code, and then that you'll see that you launch a game today and tomorrow it is duplicated. So like, will those techniques like allow for less originality in your work? How do you own it? So I think it creates a lot of those questions. It also impacts the way that you get eligible for things at the moment, right? Like if you use AI in your game, you now are ineligible to a certain awards or to appear in certain stores in different way. And that creates an impact in the visibility for your clients. Will your players boycott you? Like there's so many business aspects that you have to think through. And I think it was super interesting when you're mentioning like the way that you saw like AI as like a post-production element, which for the video game industry, I think it is more acceptable to think about in more of a pre-production element. Mm-hmm. It is like to support more of that ideation process. Like how can it be used, the generative AI, how can it use to be a supportive tool instead of a final creation tool?
Yeah, maybe continuing on that one. So one very important aspect, what we see is also changing, but it's also very important to change, is the discussion. And this comes back to how do we make the whole media industry resilient with tech and AI, is to have these discussions openly. So there used to be this situation, okay, techies wanted to talk to the creatives. Creatives didn't want to tell techies what actually makes things creative. So techies took the chances like, okay, we'll do it alone. They got to the certain point so that they got the interest of creatives, and now they are hiring the creatives into the tech industry to actually solve the last mile questions. On the other side, we have creatives who actually have formed this industry, should own this industry in the future as well. But ignoring, like Maria said, ignoring AI is not the solution of shaping the future. It's making the decisions together. And I think we need this discussion at the moment. So it's not like what AI can do and what it can't do. As I already indicated, AI can actually solve a lot of things what we think that it's not possible. We have seen it from the character consistency. It wasn't possible. Now it's possible. Emotions were not really there. Well, they are coming there. So it's not a question of technology. Can technology solve these questions? It's just what do we want from AI? And this is the most important question we should be talking in very openly, and even more than we do today.
And just wanted to insert on this very important discussion of copyright. Actually, the question of copyright existed for decades, and copyright has probably not been remunerated correctly. And I think that now, with the rise of the AI, it's more and more prevalent, the question of remuneration and fair remuneration and compensation for work because of the AI. And actually, fractional IP and fractional remuneration has probably a long way to go to actually catch up with remunerating creators across all disciplines. And I think now the AI is just like really spotlighting the gap in remuneration for IP. And those were discussions since designers of Alien. And that's not a conversation that started 2 years ago.
Well, let's tie this back into the theme of resilience. What does it mean to you in your day-to-day lives?
Well, for us, we actually look into from the different perspective. One is, of course, building an own company. As an AI agency, you have to be very quick in decision making, and you have to be very bold. You have to have an idea where we are going. You're making the decisions, you are putting the focus on those business models, those processes, those developments, but you have to evaluate continuously. And this is not like a traditional we used to know, okay, let's take this process, let's put it in place and evaluate after 5 years. So in case you have any processes that were put in place 5 years ago, please stop now. Do evaluate those, re-evaluate, are they still valid? Do we need to shift and change? And this change is very important. So as a leaders in tech, we need to be very open of our own mistakes, or to saying, okay, we do it as an experimental way. We experiment something, we pivot very fast when something is not working.
And yeah, I think that's the key, pivoting and being open to sort of critically assess your choices, your tech choices, your developments overall, the business size, the focus, everything. That I think that's a super important point, really, to remain agile in order to survive in these tumultuous times.
It's important. And the second part, what we see is actually in our clients. So when we are building AI solutions and products, and we have been doing it over 20 different projects already along the value chain, we also need to be very careful to evaluate how do we integrate those solutions into the existing landscape, into the existing workflows and software solutions and platforms, because those are evolving all the time right now. So again, coming from the industrial background and building data products, earlier we used to build them in the microservice perspective, which means that you're building very modular, isolated services. You can plug in and plug out them very quickly and easily. And this is now all of the tech solutions, and especially the AI solutions also in media industry. So what the production companies are very often thinking is the current production. So they are thinking this production, the next production, the next production. They are optimizing AI solutions to one production and plugging it in the optimal favor, this one. And then comes the next production. And as we know, creatives say, okay, this is very different. This is very unique. And this is where things can go wrong. So if you don't think about how you can plug in the same solution to the next production, you don't actually get the benefits of AI, improving the production processes, making them faster, cheaper, better.
Yeah. Anybody else on resilience and your day-to-day lives or the context that you operate in?
Yeah, I totally agree with the aspect of like iteration and kind of being on top of like what's next. I think a big important when it's about like building a resilient business is also transparency and being human and people first, because like at some point you kind of need, if you're just transforming and changing your plans like in a very stank way that like the upper level knows like what they're doing, and then you don't have the buy-in of everyone else that is creating with you and that is moving forward with you, that's just recipe for burning out, to lose people along the way, to let them go and get new people in. And I think part of that resilience is kind of having like a core of like who we are as a company, what do we want to do, like what are our goals, like having like a core value
absolutely.
Base
your that, identity your yeah. professional, why is it that you do what you do, and have a clear awareness of what is it that you who are you as a company as well.
And share that with your team, share that yeah. with the people that you're leading, right? Because mm-hmm. I think that also there's a level of good leadership also creates resilient teams.
A few points on resilience that we kind of reflected on throughout the years. So definitely just echoing what was said, to have one of the core values of keeping agile and you know, land on your feet and just have a very flexible mindset and support yourself as leaders with just teams that believe in your vision, even when things get tough. And that really kind of builds resilient businesses. Secondly, is really something that I'm sure applies to so many people in the room as well. When you're told no, when you're told it's not possible, to just kind of really stick to your vision. I mean, it's as simple as that. There were just so many times when anything from accountants to banks to advisors even were saying no, it can't be done. And it just simply can't be done. And you're just questioning it all the time. But why? And I think that is so important. Both me and my co-founder, we always just kind of took that, it's not possible, with a pinch of salt, going like, I'm is going to prove you wrong. And I think that has to happen everywhere. You know, I'm sure that so many filmmakers have heard it's not good enough, or it's too edgy, or it's too divisive, or it's too controversial, or this and that and that. And you have to just toughen up and stick to your vision. Mm-hmm. And probably not least is from again coming back to technology is think a bit ahead. What's happening in what's happening right now, because it's already here, but if you can just try to have this leap into what's happening in 2 years' time, so that you can be ready for it when 2 years' time happens.
Well, that's a bit of a challenge, Birita. I mean, you're working with a big number of production companies, and probably the sort of openness to tech and openness to new solutions possibly varies. I mean, do you encounter resistance, or is it just because it's a given that if they work together with you, they are open and they want to emphasize and sort of leverage the benefits tech can give you? But I mean, is there any moment that you navigate some problems or resistance in adopting tech and the best solutions?
So you see the whole bandwidth. So there are these small groups of people who are extremely excited and they try to do and test everything to get to the next step in the processes. And there are people who are actually kind of lagging behind, more resistant, and partly because of the good reasons, because you can also go badly wrong with testing AI if you're doing it in the wrong way. Mm. And this is what we have done in ZDF Studios work. So we are building a joint AI strategy and we are taking everybody with on the journey. So behind the camera and then in front of the camera throughout the administrative and production processes. And we are building these safe places to actually experiment with AI. So not all of the first experiments are successful, but you have to start experimenting and you have to actually bring people into the position that they don't have a fear of experimenting. And as you can imagine, and especially when you talk about financing, legal aspects, IP, there are a lot of different things where things can go badly wrong if you're just taking any of the off-the-shelf tools we are feeding in our company internal documents there just to experiment something. So we have built the guidelines and we have built a platform to actually jointly do that together with a lot of different production companies, because we have seen, or ZDF Studios, and they're very clever on that strategy, they have seen that it doesn't really make sense. Each and every production company does it alone. Mm. So we use the synergies and do it together. And that brings us actually to the next step very fast in the process.
Makes you stronger together. But assuming we have sort of independent production companies here in the audience with us this morning, is there anything that you could share that they could adapt maybe in their sort of daily operations in this?
So we are exchanging at the moment very strongly, and we are also searching for partnering opportunities. So we are a very strong partner also in the Production Alliance in mm-hmm. Germany, and they are doing it for all of the production companies inside of Germany. What we are doing is also looking into the next generation. So we are collaborating with universities, film academies, trying to see the points where we can actually kind of get the next generation of creatives already up to the speed with AI, and those can actually then help the older generation who are not that used to, not AI native, to come up to the speed. And we see this kind of collaboration, if it's inside of the company or inside of the group or student professional collaboration, when you're putting these younger, more technically native people together with the professional who has years of experience. And this experience is something we should never underestimate the importance of it. But when we put those two together, magic happens.
That could be actually a good idea. Thanks for this. Also for non-German, possibly producers in the room, to sort of get together more actively with the sort of university scene and sort of film schools and sort of start creating something. Or to see it, explore what can happen there. I'm just sort of trying to think concrete action points that people could just start when examining and testing what you mentioned earlier. Yeah, Maria, you look like you have something to say.
I was thinking production companies in the room, it's a very legitimate question to ask, what are my hurdles right now? What can I change to improve? Is it how I reach audiences? Is it rights management? Is it
financing?
Money? Exactly. Is it I'm just getting paid too late, or I feel like I'm licensing for amounts that don't feel right? And if you ask yourself the question of where at the moment is there's a pain, there's probably a solution out there that will address that and have that curiosity to explore better ways to do things. Mm-hmm. Because I think that is one of the biggest challenges in the industry is it's just really kind of sticking to some old systems, old processes, because this is how it has been done for many, many years. But if it hurts, if it feels uncomfortable, if it feels too tough, then there might be someone out there who has spotted that pain point and has addressed it with a solution. Mm-hmm. And if there's curiosity and appetite for this type of exploration, probably that solution is not perfect, but you can adapt it to your challenge and hopefully solve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Is there any tech narrative that you are skeptical about in the current conversations or trends?
Well, I would say every time you hear this thing is revolutionizing everything and it will solve all our problems, that's the skepticism. There's not one tool, one way, one thing that is going to be like the ultimate thing. Mm-hmm.
The savior of everything.
Yeah, yeah. So I think like every tool is a tool and we should treat it in the same way that when you got a pencil and now you have an automatic pencil and now you have Photoshop and then you have whatever. I think that's the skepticism, is whenever a thing is the thing.
Mm-hmm. I think one aspect what we are doing, especially in the areas of agentic AI, we are building these modular building blocks, agents that actually can collaborate with each other and being half autonomous. And there have been these claims, okay, AI is taking over. I'm very skeptical about that. And on the other hand, I'm very skeptical that AI would be able to take creative industries over. I don't believe in that. AI can help creatives to boost and to become more resilient. But I don't see AI taking over. And very importantly, we should not let AI to come to that space in the first place. So we need to stay in the lead.
As I was kind of thinking about trends, I think what is important is to continue to keep human-centric experience at the core of everything. And once we continue doing that and we realize that human-centric experiences are relevant, people do want to go to the cinema. People do want to engage in activities together. We all want to, you know,
gather around
the fire and hear the stories. Yeah. Absolutely. And any technology trend is not going to replace the need for human-centric experiences. And that's all, I think.
Wise words. That would be the perfect ending of this conversation. Thank you very much. Thank you. Have a great festival.
A warm thank you to our wonderful speakers, Mafalda Duarte, Maria Tanjala, and Dr. Pirita Pyykkönen-Klauk. And of course, thank you, dear listener, for joining us and being part of this journey. And that's all for today's episode. This season of Industry Insights is co-funded by Creative Europe Media. Be sure to subscribe and help spread the word. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts and also on the European Film Market website at efm-berlinale.com. We look forward to welcoming you to future episodes of Industry Insights. Thank you for listening and goodbye.